recording engineer with his own jingle recorded by some famous names, I understand.
That's right. Barry Mace. Sam Will Smith.
No rubbish. Welcome again, Gerald, to the program here. And this is part three of our chat. And we were talking earlier on about a particular artist that you worked with in the early days by the name of Donovan. He was sort of being given the impression that several people were saying, oh, he might be the British version of Bob Dylan. Not quite made it, but certainly very popular. I remember my girlfriend at the time absolutely adored him, you know, and of course I had to sort of play second base to Donovan all the time. But we're going to have a listen to a track that you recorded with him, Mellow Yellow, and you say you're feeling a bit yellow yourself today.
I'm afraid I've got jaundice, so yeah.
Right. Well, let's have a listen to the music. We'll talk about him after we've heard this from Donovan.
I'm just mad about saffron. Saffron's mad about me. I'm just mad about saffron. She's just mad about me. They call me Mellow Yellow, quite rightly. They call me Mellow Yellow, quite rightly. They call me Mellow Yellow. I'm just mad about 14. 14's mad about me. I'm just mad about 14. She's just mad about me. They call me Mellow Yellow. They call me Mellow Yellow. Quite rightly. They call me Mellow Yellow. Born a high forever to fly. A wind of a velocity nil. Born a high forever to fly. If you want your cup power fill. They call me Mellow Yellow. They call me Mellow Yellow, quite rightly. They call me Mellow Yellow.
Donovan and Mellow Yellow, and here on the line now, it's Gerald Chavin talking about his experiences in recording as a recording engineer back in the 60s and early 70s and later 70s, I suppose, at AdVision Studios. You worked with Donovan, didn't you, on this particular track?
Yeah, I mean, Donovan's original producers were three guys. One was Jeff Stevens, mm-hmm. who wrote a number of popular tracks. Not Donovan actually wrote Universal Soldier and Colors, but he produced the Donovan stuff, and along with a guy called Terry Kennedy, who was fairly well known as a producer. Terry's no longer with us. In all honesty, I can't ever remember seeing Terry in a sober state, so I don't really know what he was.
Yeah, well, that's probably why his life was shortened, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. But Jeff Stevens, I don't know if you realised, he was the creator behind the only record that we ever did at AdVision to win a Grammy Award. It was called Winchester Cathedral.
Yeah.
Jeff did that.
And now you were telling us a bit of an interesting story about that particular track, because the Winchester Cathedral, in fact, was just a bunch of session men, I think, at the time, wasn't
it? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because who knew that it was going to catch on? And we actually really used, I mean, it wasn't sort of like equalizing. We actually used like a horn to make the singer, who again was a session musician, mm-hmm. sound like he was coming from the 1950s. We didn't use any electronics to do that. It was the actual real sound. As soon as the thing got some traction, they had to appear on Top of the Pops and all those kind of things.
Right.
Consequently, they ended up forming a group of people, musicians, that were fairly competent, obviously not quite as competent as session musicians, but good enough to mime on Top of the Pops, because you didn't really need to do much to mime. That was the way that worked.
Astonishing.
But, Donovan, he came into the studio, literally just him and his guitar and these guys that were the producers. And he didn't really need any producing or direction. He just literally, we put a microphone in front of his face and another one on his guitar, mm-hmm. hit the button, and out pops Universal Soldier and Colors. And one of my favorite tracks that he did was called Sunny Good Street, which
Cool.
And that was actually brilliant. And he was a very, very nice guy.
Uh-huh.
I mean, when you're in a work environment with people, they don't put on any airs and graces that they might do if they're in public. So they're just their normal selves.
Well, the thing is, I was actually thinking about that very, very fact this morning, because you're actually, it's kind of a bubble in a way, because you are there as part of the process. And they're going to want to react and communicate with you, because you are part of that process, and so you become part of the team, as it were.
Absolutely, and obviously, when you establish any kind of rapport with any artist, whatever it is they're doing,
mm-hmm.
they usually like the idea of continuity. So, you know, if we record something with whoever it is, and it turns out to be reasonably successful, that, you know, it's a bit like a mascot or a rabbit's foot. They want to go back and do exactly the same thing again in the same place, hoping that their success will be emulated for the second, third, and fourth time. And
that's understandable in a way, because you obviously are there, and you're working the faders, and you're sort of balancing things, and you're changing equalization, you know, and so on and so forth, tone controls for the uninitiated, and you're giving it. You're sort of fine tuning everything for them, and they understand that.
Yeah, and those days everything went straight onto stereo two track. We didn't have a four or an eight track in for quite some time, but so it was just like instant. You know, we record it, and then they could. We had a machine in our disc cutting laboratory called. It would create acetates, mm-hmm. which were the precursor to, and it was the way, because way before cassettes, it was the way that the producers mm-hmm. and the artists could send out their work to record labels on an acetate. Acetates have a finite lifespan. They're not like 45s or 33s, if anybody can remember those, and they're certainly nothing like 78s, but they do have a finite lifespan, and I did have a whole host of them, and they have this incredibly strange, pungent aroma, which is impossible to describe.
It is.
I don't even have now, because there's no need to. I don't even have a turntable. So I decided about 10 years ago to start selling my acetates, and it was amazing how much people were prepared to pay for
it. I can imagine.
But, you know, and I don't, I miss the smell, but I don't miss the acetates, because the sound quality, it obviously.
Yeah, pretty basic. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, that's what we did. We used to cut acetates with a cutting lathe, And then they got distributed. It was the only way in those days that anybody else could hear what we did, because, you know, nowadays it's much easier. Yeah.
Let's sort of like take a look at that aspect for a moment. I mean, any young people listen today, and you talk about having to, if you want to sort of take a copy of a track that's been recorded, and, you know, sort of basically take it to your record label you want to promote it, as it were. This was the only way you could do it. And of course, trying to understand that today, where you can literally just shove a little piece of plastic into the side of your laptop and, well, Bob's your uncle, there it is on your memory stick.
Or in the cloud.
Nobody even uses CDs anymore, because I remember 10 years ago, we used to cut CDs, 10, 15 years ago, when you wanted to have a copy of something. It's changed exponentially. And I'm thinking, when I'm putting my programs together and I'm basically taking music, transferring it, sending through a distribution app, and it's been taken the other end and loaded into the system. It's just astonishing that the changes that have happened in our lifetime, Gerald.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And when we used to record things, if take two, the second half of take two was way better than the
together.
I used to get a razor blade.
Emmy board. Would you call it? Would you have the Emmy board?
something called a China graph pencil.
Yeah,
and I was really, you know, very adept at doing this sort of thing. And believe it or not, one of the only things I've really kept is what I call my recording engineer's savior kit. The cutting board, the tape, I've still got some, and the old single-sided razor blade.
It's astonishing, because I've still cut mine. It's called an Emmy tape. It's an Emmy tape thing, and it's sort of silver. I've still got mine.
But and then, of course, you ended up, after sort of like four tracks, with eight tracks, an eight-track recorder. There were a number of makes, not many, We it used to be 2 inches wide, so the cutting thing was way bigger, and it was much difficult to edit things together. But we had to do it. It's not like today, where you can just literally, you know, adjust the computer and tell it to do this, that, and the other. In those days, we physically had to do it, it was intricate, but it was just our daily routine. And when I think back on it now, and how much power I had to lose. You know, but fortunately, 99% of the time, everything went well. Let's put it like that.
Well, there was nothing else. We didn't know anything else. I mean, this is the way it was done. And I had exactly the same experiences for many, many, many years. And it worked, as you say, because we didn't have any alternative. I remember the first time I used a waveform generator on a computer back in, I think it was 1998, I went, oh my goodness, this is going to change everything. And I was right.
We had a similar situation when, if you remember, there's a term called phasing or flanging.
Yes, I remember. I did come
to actually get that to work in analog, because this isn't digital, we had to actually have two tape machines almost in sync with each other, and as they went out of sync, you got this kind of weird noise. And, you know, for a while it was the sort of like flavor of the month, and you know, we'd set ourselves up, and then of course we had a variable voltage device that controlled the speed of the motor on the tape machine. Mm-hmm. So if somebody wanted something to be played faster and or slower, just by turning a wheel and adjusting the voltage so that the speed of the machine would go up half an octave or down half an octave, we could do that reasonably easily. But now, of course, it doesn't involve any thought almost whatsoever. Till the cows come home. So, yes, things have changed dramatically. But then, you know, the original guys who invented the cylinder record would say exactly the same. When the 33 and a third album, vinyl album, came out. Mm. So, you know, yes, you're right. Exponential is the perfect word to describe the speed of technology, but it's not obviously in the music business, but
everywhere.
You know,
yeah, sure.
That's the experience that I've had.
We're talking with Dr. Gerald Chavin, extraordinary recording engineer. Indeed, it's not who he recorded, it's who he didn't record. We're going to move on now to a gentleman named Georgie Fame, who I had the pleasure of meeting several times during his early career, and did some great stuff. And you worked with him, didn't you?
Absolutely. We also did a big live concert with the Harry South Big Band at the Royal Festival, which I can tell you about later. But the thing with Georgie Fame, again, obviously that wasn't his real name, but we used to call him Clive. I mean, you don't normally call people. It was he did a jingle, right?
That's right.
For a petrol company that was called National Benzol or something. And it was only 30 seconds, but it was very catchy. And everybody from the record company said, well, can we not turn this into a single? Uh-huh. And did by re-recording stuff and adding, he wrote extra verses and things. And to the best of my knowledge, it's the only other record that's turned from a jingle to a number one hit. The other one was I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing.
Let's have a listen. Okay. Let's have a listen. This is Georgie Fame and Get Away, or National Benzene Petrol Station commercial.
Gotta go. I hope you're ready, cause take a look outside. Don't mind the weather, girl, let's take a ride. Get away, we'll leave the city folk, they'll have to stay. Don't have to pack a thing, just get away. Gotta go, get away. Take a look at that deep blue sea. Don't you think it looks great? Not a cloud to be seen in the sky, and the sun won't wait. I believe that the time is right, don't let it slip away. Instead of dreaming about tomorrow, you can live today. If you get away, I know a little place not far from town. Gotta go, a kind of pretty place, three up, two down. I think if ever you decide to stay, well, I know it's gonna be because we got away. Three up, two down. Get away. I think if ever you decide to stay, well, I know it's gonna be because we got away. Yes, we got away good. Get away, we got away good. Go. We went and got away good. Gotta get away. Gotta away. Gotta get away.
Fabulous track, Get Away, and the great Georgie Fame, otherwise known as Clive Powell, I remember his name. Georgie Fame, and of course he was the only British music act to have achieved three UK number ones, top 10 chart entries, Get Away, and The Ballad of Bonnie and Clyde, of course.
Yeah, they were my sound effects with the machine guns, I told you.
You recorded all those three?
Yeah, the machine gun sound effects, you know, I was lucky to blend them in. But when we did a concert at the Albert Hall, and I don't know if any of your listeners are familiar with the way the Albert Hall is laid out, but there's no curtains or anything. It's just an open stage. The first act that was on, which was nothing to do with us, although they had been into the studio to record stuff, was an act called the Dubliners.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and they did their first act, and then they went off, and then I had to go back onto the stage and set the microphones up. And as I'm doing it, I'm just a young kid, really, and as I'm doing it, all these people start charging towards the stage. I thought, what's going on? And they all sort of shouted at me, "Were you responsible for the sound?" Because we couldn't hear anything of the Dubliners. And I looked up and I said, "See that booth up there? That guy was responsible."
Great. Yeah, not me. Nothing to do with me.
It wasn't, so, you know. But it was scary. Yeah, my boss, when he heard one day that the Dubliners were coming in, he had a headache and he left it to me.
I see. Maybe he'd been listening to that Peter Sellers send up of an Irish ukulele band. Maybe. Look, Gerald, it's been great talking to you again. But before I let you go, I just wanted to sort of because next week we're going to actually talk in some detail about your experiences building the studios that eventually recorded a Tubular Bells with Mike Oldfield. Okay, that's something we're going to talk about that next time. Yes.
Now it took me a year of my life.
It took a year of your life, and I will specifically go through that next time. Now, before I let you go, I wanted to talk to you about ELO, Electric Light Orchestra, because you were involved in Mr. Blue Sky, if I recall. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, and Jeff and I became very friendly because Roy Wood was obviously also from Birmingham. He introduced me to Jeff's group called the Idle Race, which
That's
is
it.
The pre...
Yeah, yeah.
Jeff then joined the Move, actually, but Jeff got on and I got on very, very well. And when one day he heard me on the phone to one of the guys at what was then EMI Studios and now, of course, Abbey Road, I'd arranged to go and see one of the engineers during a Beatles session. And he could hear what I was saying and he sort of begged me if he could go with me. I mean, he almost got down on his knees.
Wow.
He said, "Look, you can come. Don't say anything and watch, because I won't get involved either. I just like to watch too." And it's just an amazing situation that years later he produced some of the stuff, and of course the Traveling Wilburys. But Jeff was absolutely, obviously talented beyond most people.
One of the most incredible things he did was War of the Worlds. That was incredibly incredible production.
Wasn't that Jeff Wayne?
Oh, that was Jeff Wayne, wasn't it? You've tried Jeff Lynne.
Yeah.
I do beg your pardon.
Yeah. Well, I did
you worked on that
as well,
didn't you?
sorry. But yeah.
There's a connection, folks. You see, I haven't completely thrown him off. Yes, of course it is. Yeah, Jeff Wayne.
Yeah, Jeff Wayne is an American.
Right. Yes, of course he is. Yeah.
And Jeff Lynne, I mean, sometimes when you work with people closely, it becomes very self-evident very, very quickly how talented they are.
Indeed.
Obviously, nobody could have known the heights that he rose to musically, the accomplishments that he got to, but it was inevitable to me that something was going to happen. Obviously, I wouldn't know what, otherwise I'd be a squillionaire. But, you know, he is a very, very talented man.
Absolutely,
and a perfectionist as well.
What?
And he was a great guitarist and also has a really good voice. So, you know, with all of those attributes, it was inevitable that he was...
I confused Jeff Wayne with Jeff Lynne. I'm not feeling 100% today, so I'll use that as my excuse. Now, he did some, I mean, Telephone Line, Evil Woman, Living Thing, Don't Bring Me Down, Hold On Tight, and of course the, I suppose you can say it's not just a classic, Mr. Blue Sky, it's become kind of an anthem, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he just somehow supersedes every expectation I ever had of him, and they were pretty high to start with, so yes, he is a very talented man. Roy Wood was a very talented man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Somehow or other, the two of them didn't really gel. Jeff did actually join the Move, and we did an album together with the Move.
That's
and
right.
Jeff.
It was Shazam.
And it was an interesting experience. But then, kind of, Carl Wayne left. He was the lead singer of the Move, and. Then Roy didn't want to, he wanted to form ELO, and they did that together.
Yeah.
And I think that lasted about 10 minutes. And then Roy left then and became Wizard and other things.
Now, on Mr. Blue Sky, incredible ending that they come up with, all of a sudden there's this incredible change of tempo, there's a huge orchestration. And, of course, you also used a vocoder in the middle of it, didn't you, Mr. Blue Sky?
And, I mean, a lot of that was based upon, I think, if you listen to the end of Day in the Life by the Beatles, you can hear that crescendo.
Yeah. Yeah, but it had such a lot of original things going on in there, though, and I think that is why it's become such an anthem.
I was a big fan of the Beatles, and one of your then cohorts, a guy called Kenny Everett, who I worked with quite he loved everything that Jeff did.
He also loved phasing stuff as well.
And I did quite a few jingles for Kenny.
Really?
Edited. Oh, yeah, I'll send you some, and then you can decide which ones you want to use.
Oh, please, I'd love to hear those, actually, because, you know, I met Kenny when he was in Radio London. I met him at Radlon Sales Limited office in London, not on the ship. And I also got to know Dave Cash a bit later in years.
Yeah.
I met him, I was chatting for him for about 10 minutes at the offices there, and the impression I got of him was that his brain was like working 1,000 miles an hour all the time, you know? And we talk about the technology today. You imagine if Kenny was around today with today's technology, what he could do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was the precursor of the really hip DJ, question about it. But he had so brilliant ideas, which...
astonishing stuff.
He blew everyone out of the water with all the things.
Absolutely.
I worked with him in the studio quite a few times, and we did a few radio shows that were transmitted abroad, actually. It was a great experience. Everything I've ever done, really, has been a tremendous experience. I was so lucky. I don't lose sight of the fact how lucky I was to work with really, really clever, talented people that 50 years down the road, people can still talk about.
Well, we've got it all to look forward to when your book comes out, White A Shade of Sound, sometime. Is it going to be this year, or is it going to be any waiting? Is worth working on the publishers?
I'm just finalising things with the publisher in the next few weeks. So,
chapter on Kenny Everett, I should think. You'd take a lot of interest in that.
But what you have to realise is that this book is not just for the UK.
Indeed.
Hardly anyone in America probably nobody in America that's ever heard of Kenny Everett.
Mm, that's true.
So, you know, a lot of the people that I work with were international stars. And, you know, you kind of have to focus on what the international audience is going to want to listen to or read, I should say, rather than the parochial things that happened in the UK.
I'll
send you some jingles anyway.
Okay, and I look forward to that. I will hold you to it as well, because he was my mentor. I used to do a lot of stuff that he did, almost like falling off a log, which I really got into playing with three tape recorders, running a piece of tape from one tape recorder to another, and sort of stretching the echoes and doing phasing effects as well. I really got into that myself, you know, and back in the day. And I look forward to it. Look, we're going to go out with Mr. Blue Sky. I think it's a perfect thing to finish on today. As always, Gerald, it's been great to talk to you again. We're going to have another session, one more session with you, and we'll talk about the remarkable Tubular Bells, which you were involved in extensively, I suppose is a good word, yes?
Yeah, well, I was the only one who knew how to work the equipment because
you built it. There you go. On that, folks, we're going to leave you with the sound of Electric Light Orchestra, Jeff Lynn, Mr. Blue Sky. Take care. See you next time.
Bye.
Ciao.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Why you had to hide away for so long? Why did we come on? the blue sky. Please tell us why
you had to hide away for so long. Where did we go wrong?
Please tell us why
you had to hide away for so long.
Where did we go wrong? Hey there, Mr. Blue, it's a place to be with you. Look around, see what you do. Everybody smiles at you. Hey there, Mr. Blue, it's a place to be with you. Look around, see what you do. Please to be with you. Look around, see what you do. Look.